I'm Dr. Stephanie Munt.
And I'm Dr. Ellie Summers.
And this is Two Women Running Their Mouths, a podcast for women who run by women who run. Our 80-20 rule, 80% dishing, 20% running. We are live. We're back.
We're back.
Season 1, episode 2.
Yes, here we go. Two women running their mouths. Today, Steph and I are going to dish.
Yes, 80% dishing. Yes.
What are we talking about today, Steph?
Today, we're going to talk about hips, basically all things hips, the things that women get told about their hips and how they're involved in their pain, and why maybe these things that we're told aren't necessarily helpful or true, and what we can do about it.
Yeah. So what do women get told?
Personally, I think the first thing I ever heard about mine were that, I mean, it was more weakness, but that my glutes were too weak, which I think is so common in the running world.
It is so common. I mean, that one alone, I think, sets the stage for a lot of other things that women hear, which is that their hips are too wide. Maybe not too wide, but they have pain because they have wide hips. And I think it's pertinent that we chat about these things because it's pervasive in women, in our narrative, in running, and in sport in general. I think today we want to dish about it and chat about why these things are unhelpful and also probably why they're not true, and sort of riff and spin on that. So it sounds like you've been told these things before, Steph.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The, one side of the pelvis being rotated too much because glutes on one side are too weak. Someone told me once that my sartorius was too weak.
for those of you who don't know, the sartorius muscle isn't it the longest muscle in the body?
It is.
And it's this super skinny muscle that starts like at the top of the pelvis and sort of like, say, winds down to the inside of the knee.
It's not super helpful in running.
No. Not one that we look at specifically very, very much, because I don't know that it's really a problem ever.
not really, no. I think in cyclists, maybe there may be some like fatigue problem issues because of that. The motion of cycling, but I still haven't heard of it or seen it. So, you know, just any sort of like one specific muscle is too weak, and that's your fault, and that's what's causing your pain, and now your pelvis is not stable enough to do what you want it to do. That narrative.
How does that make a person feel?
Awful.
Like garbage.
Like garbage, exactly.
Like, it doesn't make you feel good. It makes you feel like your body is the problem, and that you're the problem, and that it's your fault, and that there's nothing you can do to fix it. It's this unchangeable variable. Now, strength is a changeable variable, but your structure is not. Mm-hmm. And I think when runners are told these things, it can put them in this cycle of negativity about what their body can do, how it can perform and function within the context of sport and running.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to your point, strength is something that we can change and we can improve. However, just the global statement of your glutes being too weak doesn't actually correlate to distance running.
Yeah.
It's not true. If you're a sprinter, maybe you need more powerful glutes. Yes.
Yes.
But distance running, so not even the unmodifiable things about your stable or your structure being unstable, but then something that just really, when you look at the research and the way the muscles work, when you're doing long distance running, it's just not, doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, I actually pulled up the Dorn study. So there's this study that is frequently referenced in the running world, in our running world and space, I guess you could say, that talks about the different forces and the different muscles that are required in different parts of the gait cycle, and looked at it with relative to changes in speed as well. And as Steph highlights here with distance running, the glutes are like really not that important.
Your hip flexors are more important, even and your hamstrings. Yeah.
One of the most important muscles actually happens to be our calf muscles. You made a post about this on Instagram not that long ago. What did you compare it to with the calves? Didn't you compare it to something?
Well, I've just had experiences where many people are told that they need to actually consciously think about squeezing their glutes while they're running. And I've told people that after I was told that in school, even was guilty of that when I initially started. And then I thought, you know, I tried it myself. I was like, what? This is so uncomfortable. This is not normal. And then reading more about just, you know, movement automaticity and movement freedom and how, you know, the elite runners in the world are not consciously thinking about how they're moving. Yeah. So why should we be having people do that? And that actually can make you less efficient too, because you are taking away from your movement freedom. Yeah. So we still have people saying that, squeeze your glutes when you run, and nobody says squeeze your calf when you run. And that's actually one that's helping you more.
And to be clear, we wouldn't ask you to squeeze your calves either, but no, I think that comparison is a really good example of where we just got lost in the weeds on what causes injury and pain and why women specifically maybe have injury or experience injury and pain. And I think the concept that women, that our glutes are just always the problem, is really messed up. I don't know about you, but I feel like it stems from just a long history in the physical therapy world of perpetuating that narrative that hip weakness is necessary, or sorry, hip strength is necessary for you to be able to do these things. And sure, we want to have a strong body in all ways as athletes and that sort of thing. But personally, I think the narrative just got a little bit carried away.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, especially as young, impressionable new grads and students, it's no one's fault necessarily. It's just like any other, I don't know if you want to call it a theory or any other set of beliefs that just gets passed down until someone starts to question it and critically think about it and realize that maybe we've just been passing that along because we haven't delved into if this actually does or makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's just the easy button, right? You get used to, at least in working in a clinic space that's, you know, sort of classical in nature, you get used to some of the narratives that get passed along from older therapists and sort of saying what they say, and it gets easy. It's like, oh, this seems to work, so I'm just going to use that same narrative over and over and over again. And one of them happens to be, you know, hip width and hip weakness and this idea for women that we just have these unstable, weak pelvis regions, which also brings me back to core strength. You know, it's all kind of tied into that middle area for women that for some reason we're just made to feel like those regions are not good enough for these things. And they always have to be strong in a particular way. And they always have to move in a particular way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a huge barrier to this ultimate freedom of movement that I think we strive for as athletes, where you're just out there moving without thinking about it. And that's like the ultimate goal, is to not to have to think about your body and what it's doing. And so as a coach and as a therapist, how do you feel what you say to an athlete can impact their performance?
I think it has, the way that we say things and what we say has a huge impact on what they're going to focus on, what they're going to think about, and then ultimately too, how they perform. Because if you do, and this is where it gets so tricky, and I think this is the art of what we do, is how to speak so that, again, using those air quotes, say the right things or things that are less wrong, in order to empower people, and not scare them, but also help them realize like what the plan of action needs to be for them to reach their goal. Because I think everything that we could say and we focus on or if we point something out that yes. they're already maybe self-conscious about or have been told before, then they may perseverate on that, and that can become the focus. And I've done that so many times yeah. on accident.
Same. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as a young therapist myself, it was like, that was just the way that it was done. And you didn't really think, I didn't really think about the impact that that type of language would have on somebody long-term. You're just like trying to get somebody better, ideally as fast as possible. But those narratives stick with people for years and years and years. In fact, I had a runner on my team who, after your post, I had reshared it. She was like, oh my God, my mind is blown. I've been told my entire life that my glutes are weak. Her mm-hmm. entire life. And I mean, I just can't, I feel fortunate. I have never experienced that in my healthcare, like my pursuit of healthcare and consumption of the sporting world, but I just think that is such a disservice to so many girls and women out there that we continue to say these things with no real basis behind them.
Right. Absolutely. And then her whole life too, I'm sure she's worked on it.
Yeah.
But then you go to another
I gotta strengthen my glutes. I gotta focus on my glutes. And I've had athletes who, you know, have been perpetually told they need to strengthen their glutes, and they're working so hard on getting their glutes strong. And then they get to the point where they're like, I don't know how to make my glutes stronger than they already are, but it's still there. It's still very much part of their experience and something, like you've said, that you just tune into and you start to think about, and you get a little bit too focused on, and it can really draw away from the fun of the sport, the joy of your activity, and how you feel about your body and body image.
Right. Yeah. I want to repeat that. That's the big point here, is that it can really take away from the fun of the sport and how you feel like in control of your body and your capability of improving or healing, whatever state you're in.
Right. Right. Why do you think women get told these things?
I think one of the things it comes back to, like you said, it's easy. Yeah. And it has, to a certain extent, worked. You know, a lot of people do get better when they, quote, strengthen their glutes, whether they're actually doing strength or just doing some bridges, you know, they just heal naturally over time. And so I think for some, that kind of supports that hypothesis if they do end up getting better, at least in the short term. And then I think there's probably especially for core and glutes, there's an aesthetic component to it too, where women want to look a certain way, and that may like also facilitate feeling strong or feeling good about their body.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, running itself is a very aesthetic sport. I tend to think that these types of narratives come from just ingrained classical understandings of the sexes, I guess you could say, and what you see visually when you look, you know, you compare a man next to a woman. And, you know, our thought is like, oh, she's got wide hips. And we automatically presume that this is the lesser state of the two in the ability sense. And I've never really understood that. I don't understand why we compare a woman's body to a man's body in the first place. But the presumption is always that a man's is the better state. And all that means is that every part of a woman's body then is going to be broken down and torn to bits and made to seem like it's not capable of doing these things, because obviously it's shaped different. Mm-hmm. And the irony in that is, you know, if you kind of look in on some of the research and studies they've done, our Q angle. So for those of you who don't know what Q angle is essentially an angle of your hip relative to your pelvis, your thigh bone. I don't know how to describe that better on a podcast, but it's an angle.
Yeah, I think that's an angle. From your hip down to your knee, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And so like thigh bone, hip to knee creates like this triangle shape. And a lot of the studies that, or not a lot, there's a study that I looked at a couple of years back that showed that these angles between men and women are actually very, very similar, if not nearly identical. And so, sure, the structure and shape of a woman's pelvis is maybe a little bit different, but the angles themselves are really similar. We've also seen in a lot of studies done in the last several years when they've started looking at Q angle as a potential issue that it's not actually contributing to running related injuries or doesn't appear to be correlated. And so I think as a therapist and a coach now that hears people coming into my office saying these things and hears that they've been told these things by a provider, by a doctor, a physical therapist, a coach, a chiropractor, whoever, I like want to stop them in their tracks and reframe that narrative. How would you reframe that narrative for someone?
That's a really good question. And I'm excited to hear what you have to say too. I think first of all, it depends a lot on your relationship with that person. If you've been working with them for a very long time and they, or you've known them, it's a friend or something and they bring that up, I think you can be a little more direct. But for those who have been told this all their life and that feels like part of their identity, you have to be a little bit softer, I think, in that approach. Yeah. So resisting the urge to just be like, no, that's actually not true. Look at the research. Because that's going to take time for them to accept and come to realize. So sometimes I'll try to just ask more questions about what has brought them to that conclusion. What if they actually think that that is what's going on? Yeah. And then if they end up, because a lot of times, you know, working with people over several weeks or months, sometimes I'll just kind of stick to that at first. And then after they're getting better, I'll start to ask a few more questions about, you know, what do you think now looking back? Do you think that any of those things were actually true and why or why not? And usually they'll kind of come to their own conclusion, maybe that wasn't actually an issue. And I think that them coming to it is a lot stronger than my urges to just be like, misinformation, don't listen to that.
I know. Yeah. This is Steph's bringing up a technique called motivational interviewing. And it's a skill to learn how to listen and resist the urge to fix or correct things. And certainly in physical therapy and in the coaching world, these skills come in really handy because you want people to come to their own conclusions, if at all possible, by asking thoughtful questions, but you also want them to feel seen and heard. And if this is a real narrative for people coming in, a soft approach is really helpful. There, I think, will always be certain folks who are just ready for that, like, shut it down. type of language. But I'm with you there 100%. I tend to try and get curious about why, like, if they think it's true. And sometimes I'll just ask, you know, how did that make you feel when they told you that, you know, you have weak hips or that your hips are too wide or that your hips are the problem to all of the injuries you've ever had in your lower extremity? And usually that's when a person will open up and be like, it didn't feel good. And I think as a therapist, taking that listening approach allows you to figure out where somebody is ready to hear information and honestly just kind of like move it along from there. So a lot of the times, instead of, you know, really focusing and reinforcing that narrative, I just focus on new narratives. So I'll be like, you know, maybe I test their hip strength and say out loud, your hips are so strong. It's really impressive. And really focus on their strengths moving forward and the plan that's going to move them from where they are to where they want to be. Because ultimately, if they've been told these things over and over and over again, it's going to take a while for that ickiness to clear out, I guess you could say.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. And I like that, asking them how it made them feel. And then not necessarily, just like you said, not fixing, but just sitting with that and being curious about their experience and not listening to have a better answer for them, but just listening to hear what they have to say.
Yeah. Which is really hard to do when you know that it's just like this, maybe this one thing that just is just making them feel bad all the time. So yeah, then it also comes with maybe a little reassurance there that they're going to be okay, that even if they have weakness in their hips, that we can change that, that that's not a predictor for their ability to perform, for their ability to run healthy, for their ability to run strong, and for their ability to move past this current situation.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think even the language of, I try to not even say weakness anymore.
Same.
If that's what it, you know, what we would call it. What do you use? Sometimes I'll say, you know, this side maybe isn't as strong as the other side, or there's just some differences that, because they can feel it sometimes if you just do a simple manual muscle test. And who knows though, if that's even actually strength, if it's pain inhibition, like we can't really tell with a manual muscle test, you know, how much we're putting into our hand.
And or they might win a hip strength test every time, and just like a glute med test, I'm going to win that pretty much every time, unless they're a hockey player.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So just, you know, maybe, and they can notice. So just saying, oh, there was a little bit of a difference side to side, but you're still very strong. And here's what we can do. That.
Yeah. Yeah. I am the same way. I try really hard not to use the word weakness anymore. And I'll say things like, you know, you're really strong and I think we're ready to get you even stronger. So always starting from this place of like, you're okay. Your body's amazing. We can move you from where you are to where you want to be, and trying to keep it positive without being, without lying, I think too, you know, so transparent, you know, sure, there seems to be some asymmetries, but these are things we can adapt to and we can change, and keeping it through a lens that steers them towards the end of the dark tunnel, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sometimes I'll compare a person's journey in physical therapy is like, you know, we're in a dark forest and I've got the flashlight, and it's like, I'll shine the flashlight around, but you're going to steer the path forward. Yeah. And I think as a therapist, that's kind of the opposite of the way we were trained, which is like, I hold the key, I hold the power to fix this person. And, you know, I've kind of really moved, and I know you have too, just away from that thought process. Because I think people tend to be better off in the long term for it.
Definitely. Yeah. I like that analogy a lot. Yeah. We're not the only one with the map, the flashlight, flies, the water. Yeah. I'm just holding the flashlight.
All kinds of good metaphors.
No, I do like that a lot. And you're right. I think that's ultimately helped a lot in the long term. And even for myself in my own physical therapy experiences, that was different. When I worked with Renee, that for my hip, that was different for me. And that's, I think that was kind of a turning point for me, in starting to see the power of doing things that way and doing it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you have physical therapy, when you were told you had hip weakness? How old were you?
I think, so that started in college, after probably my fourth stress fracture.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild? So that's what was
this is the cause, Steph. This is why.
I was laughing about this on my run this morning. So I was thinking back to this, and I, you know, I was in relative energy deficiency. I had been diagnosed with osteoporosis 2 years prior. And I was told that the cause of my stress fractures was glute weakness.
Wow.
That was crazy. Wow. So crazy. And then I got a leg length discrepancy was the other one, which we can talk about on another episode. So I had a heel lift. I wore a heel lift for a while.
Wow.
Like it's just, yeah. And so, I mean, that's why I'm passionate about trying to change these things now.
Cause how did it make you feel?
Like there was something structurally wrong and I needed to use this crutch the heel lift for the rest of my life. Or I needed to work on strengthening my glutes when really I just needed to freaking eat more.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about this is it just creates like what you described is like this crutch situation, and it's traumatizing. It can be traumatizing because it can feel like, you know, your world is rocked all of a sudden that you found out, I'm going to use air quotes, you found out that your body is wrong, and it's basically proven to you these internal narratives that we already have, that we're not good enough, that we're not strong enough, that we're not stable enough or whatever. And then somebody tells you that's true, and it's just like, it can drop a bomb on how you feel about your ability to perform. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't control this anymore. It's just my body. It's the way that my body is, and I'm done for.
Yeah. And I think an even more negative side effect for me at that point, and probably for a lot of young girls, is that it covers up the real problem.
Yeah.
Instead of pinning on this that I needed to change my behavior and change my relationship with food, I could blame that something was wrong with my one leg was longer than the other. I could blame that my muscles weren't strong enough. And instead of actually addressing this deeper issue, and that's, if that goes on long enough, that has severe health consequences.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing is we have sort of gotten into this situation in healthcare where people will come in and be like, I just want you to get to the root of the problem, assuming that the problem is their body, that the problem is the structure. And you just need to find that one source. And the irony is that the root is so often bigger than that and much more broad, which, you know, I think is hard for people sometimes to grasp. But certainly in many of these cases, there are very changeable, actionable things that you can do to move yourself along and move forward in a positive way and get back to running in a way that feels good.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, what would you say, or what would you suggest to a person who's maybe listening to this podcast, who has been told that she has pain because of hip width, hip weakness, unstable pelvis, core weakness?
I want you to just start to consider if those things actually feel true to you, and consider all the things you've done to address that, how being told that makes you feel, and just kind of start to sift through that, because I don't think that, again, you're not wrong. You haven't done anything wrong by thinking these things or being told these things in the first place. Even the people who told you these things, I believe, are well-intentioned or just not critically thinking through and sorting through what they've been told. So I encourage you to just think about those things, how they made you feel, and really feel true to you, and start to imagine what your life might be like or how you might feel about your body if those things just weren't true, if it was the opposite.
Yeah. How about you, Ellie? I think that's a really great way to phrase it, is, you know, asking yourself, does this actually feel true? If it does feel true to you, then maybe saying, you know, okay, if this is true, what can I do about it? And, you know, I'm biased, and I think finding a really good physical therapist is a great way to start, while knowing that you, to a certain extent, have to have a little bit of armor coming into those appointments. And if a therapist doesn't make you feel comfortable about your body or doesn't feel good, you might consider that there is a better person out there suited for you in your journey. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, 100% agree. Don't be afraid ever to get a second opinion with anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can always feel free to reach out to Steph or I if you have any questions. We both offer telemedicine. So if you're in need of help and services, Steph and I are happy to help in that regard.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Happy to help.
Cool. Anything else?
Some good dishing today.
That is good dishing. Yeah, so stay tuned for next week, our next episode. We haven't decided on a topic, I don't think, yet. Have we? Have we decided?
Not yet.
Yeah. And let us know what you think. You can feel free to email either of us. We will, maybe this time I'll put notes in the show notes.
Oh yeah, we can do that too. We're learning.
Yeah, yeah. I'll include some links to some of the articles that I talked about today and include the contact information for both Steph and I. And you can reach out to us if you need to. And if you want to sponsor and be mentioned here on this podcast, you can let us know. We are open to sponsorships.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And Steph and I are signing off.